listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
This is the Pharmacy Podcast Network's press coverage special episode of the 2024 Pennsylvania Pharmacists Association's annual conference. This is part one of a two-part series. The PPA 2024 was on February 2nd through 4th in Harrisburg. There was a record-setting number of pharmacy student participants ready to learn about the future of pharmacy care in the Keystone State. The educational programming was stacked with some amazing pharmacist providers, and the networking events connected pharmacy operators and academia with industry businesses supporting pharmacy care in Pennsylvania. The press coverage for PPA 2024 is sponsored by PrimeRx, the powerful pharmacy management software that works hard so you don't have to. We'd also like to thank RxSafe for sponsoring the PPN's press coverage. Check out PrimeRx by visiting primerx.io and visit RxSafe at rxsafe.com. And now, here's a fellow Pennsylvanian, our host and CEO of the PPN, Todd Urey.
Dr. Mack here at the PPA 2024. So good to see you. How are you?
Good seeing you, Todd. Doing amazing. Loved doing this live with you here in person. It's so much better. COVID's kind of gone now in one sense, and amazing to be together and to see each other in person.
It is. We were lucky enough to get your time. You did an amazing job talking about vaccines and how important community pharmacies are in rolling out vaccines, your national presence and national stardom, and how many of the publications really gravitated toward what you were doing in the state of New Jersey. But it was a lesson to be taught to other community pharmacies to make their pharmacies a destination of enjoyment and of fun and of celebration of health. Talk to us about that concept, because I've never heard anyone kind of put it the way that you do, and really the reason that you are portraying that Superman to the children, as well as other things that you do that are fun.
So as someone who was an entertainer prior to me being a pharmacist, as a dancer before and also a wedding planner, I think there's a special moment that you can bring to someone's life, whether it's picking up a prescription, getting a vaccine, caring for a senior at home who can't get out of their home. And we all have that option and the ability to make someone happy. And I've tried to focus that on that with my pharmacy and everything that we do. Even if it's going to a homebound patient's house to drop off medication, when you're dropping off that medication to that grandma's house, ask her if she needs help with something. You know, no one typically does that, but just me asking something like that, you know, she might say, oh, I need help taking this light bulb out. And it reminds her of her grandchildren that she doesn't have. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where we're not only filling gaps in care as pharmacists, but we're filling gaps in love. Patients deserve love. We've come through a very tough time during COVID where a lot of people have been lost. And one of the things that people have lost is that sense of care. We've become so robust to just trying to crank out everything as fast as possible, get people in and out the door, and not learning about the human being that's behind the counter. And that's kind of our job as pharmacists and healthcare professionals. And the only way we'll move forward is actually caring for the patient. And why, no matter what we do at our pharmacy or what our staff does, is we try to bring joy to our patients. And some of those aspects were, you know, dressing up in costume to give someone a vaccine, coming into the pharmacy when we have a baby's clinic and you'll hear Wheels on the Bus playing in the background. Whatever you typically wouldn't think of that happens at a pharmacy that's legal and fun happens at our pharmacy.
That's incredible. How are you able to spread this kind of messaging to any of the pharmacy schools that are close enough to you so that you might go visit some P3s or P4s and talk to them about what you've done in community pharmacy that's so different than walking into a cold, stale, national chain pharmacy that's much more about the products that you buy up front than it is about really medication management?
So the role of a pharmacist is obviously changing. It was the other day when one of my pharmacy students asked, like, are we going to be doing data entry, filling prescriptions, typing? And I said, you can if you'd like to. However, nowadays as a pharmacist, typically the pharmacist is not only doing that. There's a lot more that the pharmacist is doing. There's more value of the pharmacist being at the counter and talking to a patient when they come in saying, hey, Miss Smith, I've noticed you haven't taken your amlodipine in 137 days. And it was filled for a 90-day supply. Did something happen? Is there a reason why you're not taking that medication? Or how can we help fill that gap? oftentimes we'll find out that patients aren't doing things because they just didn't know, or they thought they'd only had to take it for a period of 90 days and didn't have to take it there afterwards. So our role as pharmacists is quickly changing, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to reach out to more schools, more students, because a lot of this learning happens when your mind is mendable. If I had to tell an 85-year-old pharmacist, hey, we're doing clinical services, we're dressing up, we're doing things different, MTM services, we're making care calls to our patients, he might look at me like, no, I'm going to check this prescription, put it into a bag, and if the patient has a question, I'm going to answer that question. Versus someone that's coming right out of school, well, guess what? This is the future of pharmacy. This is how we've adapted. This is what we're changing. It's a lot easier to pass these messages along to the students, and why I'm trying to do my best to go out to some of the schools. I was out in the past year at the University of Pittsburgh with some of my colleagues. We went out and we spoke to the students about different innovative things that they're doing. University of Sciences, PCP, we went out there, spoke to the students at their white coat ceremony, and it was all about being different. Mm-hmm. We see all of these tech companies doing things different, Google, Facebook, and you name it. We can incorporate some of those aspects into our own pharmacies, you know, remove the silos that we have and the different roles that some of our patients and our staff members think that this is the role of a pharmacist. Guess what? It doesn't have to be like that anymore. And I think a lot of the students are learning that. And when they come out to a rotation with our pharmacy, we tell them it's like Shark Tank. If they need $500 to come up with an idea, I'll give you $500. And you can come up with an idea, but that idea is going to help our patients. Yep. So no matter what we're going to do during your 5 or 6 weeks at our pharmacy, you're going to figure it out. But we're going to help and care for our patients, and we're going to find gaps in care that might have existed and find a way that once you leave here after those 6 weeks, even if you go decide to work for a pharmaceutical company afterwards, 7 years from now, we'll still be doing something that you implemented into our pharmacy. And students have absolutely loved it, and we get probably 20, 30 happy students a year at our pharmacy from all the way from Pittsburgh and even Rhode Island, South Carolina, you name it. We've gotten students come from all over the place.
Dr. MN, you are a hero. We're excited to have you back on the PPA 2024 post show, and can't wait to hear from you next.
Thank you, buddy. Always good seeing you, man.
Hey, here with Anthony with the Health Law Alliance. Introduce yourself to our listeners.
Great. Thanks so much for having me, Todd. My name is Anthony Mahajan. I'm with the Health Law Alliance, a law firm we founded.
Anthony, the thing that made me want to get you on the program for the PPA's 2024 is the fact that you have background in PBM auditing as well as defending independent community pharmacies and DEA issues and really keeping things compliant. So talk to us about what Health Law Alliance does.
Right, sure, Todd. So it's never the case that we like to come out with a business proposition that says, call us if you're in trouble. That just never really sells that well, because there's any number of people can help. We like to think of ourselves as healthcare experts insofar as the law is concerned. Given my background at McKesson, given my background at United Health, given my background at the federal government, we use that to give our clients an inside perspective on kind of the things that they should be thinking about, and, you know, help them capture risk in areas of opportunity, right? So, for example, people think about referrals as a bad word. Well, it's not, right? And in today's highly competitive industry, business partnerships are necessary to succeed. So can you have compliant sales and marketing relationships? Can you have compliant referral arrangements with providers and other business partners? Those are the types of things that we like to think about to turn around the discussion, whether it's, you know, are you getting in trouble for something, to make it an opportunity to capture.
So one of the benefits or one of the programs that's listed on your card is the PBM and Medicare Audit Defense. It's really interesting to us. We do have a program called the PBM Reform Podcast that does nothing but brings on legislators and brings on experts and brings on pharmacy owners to talk about where are we from a national perspective in PBM reform. So talk to us. What are you doing for community pharmacies in the realm of audit defense for PBM?
Sure. So one of the things that I did in my career was to oversee OptumRx. And obviously, OptumRx is one of the bigger PBMs out there, just as aggressive as CVS, Caremark, and Express Scripts. Yep. So what I like to help people understand is, what are the types of things that are going to get you on the PBM's radar? How are the ways in which you can stay off their radar? And how can you work within the terms of these provider manuals that are constantly changing? And I think these days the dialogue is a little bit different given the scrutiny that these companies are under in front of Congress, although that, you know, has yet to result in meaningful change at our level. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of questions about the role of PBMs in our healthcare delivery system, because back in 2000, the early 2000, the federal government brought enforcement actions relating to where on the formulary certain products were. But then eventually the kind of the consensus changed insofar as the government began to view them as the PBMs, meaning as sources for the government to save money. And I think now we're coming full circle where the government's, you know, obviously the government is not typically as quick to react and as quick to realize, you know, where things are going off the tracks, where they haven't been intended. And part of that's been the PBM take advantage of such a complicated and opaque drug pricing system. So you have things like spread pricing and failure to give back rebates that are really areas that, unless you're an expert within the government and the bureaucracy there changes so frequently, you don't have someone kind of bearing the standard saying, let's change. But now that Congress has picked up the mantra, it's a little bit from the competitive standpoint, right? We don't have a real focus drill down on how can the grassroots folks bring about change. And that's one of the things that's so oppressive about those PBMs is that they have these contracts that prohibit you from speaking out, prohibit you from bringing a lawsuit to effect change. You have to go into a closed door arbitration, and you could win tons of money, and then you can't talk about it. So that, you know, you're effectively precluded from letting the world know that these PBMs have wronged you. And so one of the things, you know, I was grateful to see in the congressional hearings was that they asked, I was at Friar Levitt previously, they asked a number of clients for the list of arbitrations that we had done against the PBMs. And so some of that is starting to come to light. Whether there's going to be opportunities in the public, meaning in court, to address the rights of, you know, the pharmacies that have been harmed is less clear, because class action waivers and arbitration clauses are highly favored by courts, obviously. And so I think we're in the early days, but the more people we get talking about it, the more people we get fighting back against the PBMs. Obviously, that's something that we need to do. And you know, from a legal standpoint as well, there's a number of different strategies that I think we have really kind of used in a number of different cases across a number of different PBMs to fair effect. Obviously, you're dealing with behemoths, and so you have to keep banging the gong and keep going after it. But, you know, we are seeing some traction insofar as the PBMs are less inclined to kind of, because of the congressional scrutiny, to take as extreme positions as they have previously done.
Excellent. So, Anthony, I'm going to invite you back on the PBM Reform Podcast, where we can really dig into some of the details and go through state-to-state issues and cases that have come up, and really help our listeners understand the temperature of PBM reform and where we are. But this has been really interesting, and we're excited that you got to be part of the PPA's 2024 post show.
Well, Todd, thank you so much for the opportunity. It's folks like you that are helping all of us speak together with one voice, whether it's in Pennsylvania or across the country. There are people in niches of the world that couldn't be here today that are in different states that have the same exact problems that everyone here has. And so, for you to be connecting us with, you know, an audience, with a community that really does kind of coalesce around these themes is just, you know, must be such a rewarding job. So thank you, Todd.
Thank you.
Everything.
We'll talk to you soon. combo shops, I tell you what, the future of pharmacy is not one facet of our industry. It's not just community. And we know this. They say 11,000 people from now until the end of 2024 will turn 65 every day. So that's how many seniors we're going to be dealing with. I'm here with Chi-Chi Moma. She's the owner of Springfield Pharmacy, and you are a combo shop. So let's talk combo shop, Chi-Chi.
Hi, Todd.
How are you?
I'm good.
Welcome to Harrisburg here at the Pennsylvania Pharmacists Association's 2024 meeting. Why is it important to come to these meetings? Why do you take time out of your incredibly busy week to invest in the PPA?
I would say networking. Hanging out with my friends, talking business, talking shop, and just picking people's brains and realizing that we're not in this mess alone. Yep. And then coming together with bright minds, almost like a mastermind, usually during the breaks, to figure out how we can navigate through these murky waters and figure out the next strategy to stay ahead.
You and Dr. Mac Amin have a special relationship. You kind of rely on each other, bounce ideas off each other. He was such a national lightning rod to so many of the national publications about his initiative in vaccines and administering vaccines. You also have a very special interest and commitment to your community with regards to vaccinations. So share that with us.
I'm very passionate about vaccines, and I'm very passionate about preventative health. And education is more important, actually. Educating patients is something that I love to do, because when they have the right information, they can make informed decisions for themselves and loved ones. And in my community, we didn't have a healthcare department during COVID. And being a pharmacist, and we are the most accessible healthcare professionals, getting all the phone calls and people wanting to know what's next, it pushed me to even go out there to educate people about vaccines and why they should be vaccinated. And I had to learn the hard way that there's some people that don't have insurance, mm-hmm. or they're uninsured or underinsured. And then I learned about the Vaccine for Children Providing Program that the federal government provides. So I became the first Vaccine for Children Providing Pharmacy in the state of Pennsylvania. And it was hard, but it solved problems for my community in partnering up with school districts.
Oh,
school
nice.
Nurses are amazing. And we have 15 school districts in our county. And being able to partner with all 15 of them to make sure these kids stay in school beyond like COVID vaccines and flu vaccines, but all the recommended age vaccines, and having a place where they can just walk in, because not all of them have pediatricians, not all of them have insurances, mm-hmm. and being able to do that, and I'm not the only one that is a VFC provider anymore in my state, being able to help other pharmacies become VFC providers, and many of us are going to be as well, it just warms my heart and makes me happy.
Chi-Chi, how does a community pharmacy become what you're talking about, that certification?
You have to be passionate about vaccines, because a lot of people think, oh, there must be money in this. Mm-hmm. No, you have to have heart, right? And you have to know where to go, know where those vaccine deserts are in your area, know who to connect with, where to meet the community, whether it's a place of worship or schools, mm-hmm. or just a community center in your area. And then you got to do your own research, because some people might say pharmacists cannot vaccinate children in the state of Pennsylvania. Well, there are ways mm-hmm. around things. You know, when the door is, I always say, when the door is locked, try the window. There are ways to get around breaking barriers or bridging gaps. And if I can do it, anybody can. Mm-hmm. Just ask me. You know, and you might be able to part, like for us, at some point we partnered up with now we have a health department to get a memorandum of understanding so I can do certain type of vaccines for children between 9 years of age and 17, because in Pennsylvania we can't give children vaccine. But then being a VFC provider, I can do children, all ACIP approved vaccine. Mm-hmm. So there are ways. If you really want to, there are ways.
Talk to me about trust for a second. Public trust in their pharmacists has always been very high, even nationally. However, let's start breaking that down into groups of people that look to someone that is similar to them that might speak their same language. I'm thinking of our Latino population. I'm thinking of our Black population. I'm thinking of our Asian population, where they're like, I'm more likely to trust someone that emulates and has what they feel that they can connect with from a personality perspective, or even how you look or how you sound. How does that impact healthcare from a community pharmacy's perspective?
Oh, Todd, you nailed it, because trust is very important. And I might not look like a patient, but if I can connect to the patient and allow them to feel heard, validate their feelings, show empathy, and this is one thing pharmacists are trained to do. We know how to empathize, you know? It's part of our moral code. Mm-hmm. And with my VFC clinic, I see a lot of patients from these kind of communities. I don't speak Spanish, but there's Google Translate, mm-hmm. right? I'm able to have a full conversation with a patient that doesn't speak English. And know, some people bring medical records from Russia, and it's in Russian. And we have to figure out how to translate it to English, because there's no service that can do that for me if I need to get this child in school by the end of the week. Mm-hmm. And or you can see a grandparent that just needs somebody to understand what they're going through, or be able to help them because they just came out of the doctor's appointment, mm-hmm. but they did not understand anything the doctor said. And they're coming in with their paper, like their after-visit summary paper, and I have to read it and explain it to them. They're not necessarily my patient, but they just walked in and saw a Black woman behind the counter, and they feel like, oh, she might be able to help me, you know? And then we making time to sit with them in their space and make them feel heard and seen. It goes a long way.
It's so eye-opening to me that there are facets of healthcare that we forget that fall outside the clinical, and how you just said, someone walks in, they're a Black mother, they have their child in their hand, they look behind the counter and they see you. I know just from humanism and being around with that their trust level just went up, because they're like, this woman, this pharmacist, the white lab coat, she's going to understand something about me that maybe someone else wouldn't. And I think that that is a part of healthcare that we have to imprint on our P2s, our P3s, our pharmacy students, to let them know there's bigger, there's more to healthcare than just the clinical.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And also train your staff, right? Sometimes I remember one staff member I had a couple of years ago got off the phone, put it on hold. I said, is this patient on the other line? I do not understand her accent. And I'm like, then try to understand. Open your ears. Try to understand. Imagine somebody's going through something, and yes, they maybe have an accent. English is the second language, and they're calling us. It's our job to train our ears so that we can try to understand. She's speaking English, mm-hmm. probably just not the way you're used to. So training my staff to understand that there's so many other ways to speak English in this world, and train your ears so you can hear what they're saying.
Chichi, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for participating in the Pennsylvania Pharmacists PPA 2024 post show. I want to have you back on This Week in Pharmacy sometime, and let's dig into vaccines.
Sure.
All right. Thank you. At the PPA 2024 here in Harrisburg, and who do I run into? My friend, pharmacy owner from over the way, Eric Cushy. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
It's nice to see you here in Harrisburg.
I got called into making the trip, so here I am.
You had to show up and represent. It's good. I think that having the annual in the center of the state again is a collective of both sides. So I like it here. I think we've heard that they're going to keep it in Harrisburg. So I think it's a good idea.
That's good.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to go to Philly.
I don't. The dirty side of Pennsylvania. No, I'm just teasing. Shout out to my Philly friends. All right. Let's talk pharmacy business. So last time you were in, we were really talking about more like PBM reform. But let's talk about the positive side. And I like positivity. I'm a glass half full kind of guy. What as a pharmacy owner, you have four locations, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to pharmacy owners that are listening right now regarding ideas that you've implemented that have worked that are cash-based options to really drive more profit away from just having a dispensing fee?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, Todd, because hopefully if you're in Pennsylvania, you're a member of PPCN, and you're taking advantage of the vast opportunities that we have in the Medicaid space.
Mm-hmm.
We can continue to complain about reimbursements. You and I just talked about there's some blood in the streets right now with some stores closing.
Yep.
Three in the last 48 hours in the state. But there's opportunities out there. You know, certainly with our Medicaid patients to help provide better outcomes for the patients we're already taking care of. If you're not a member of PPCN, I encourage you to join and see what it's all about.
Yeah, I know. Brandon Antonopoulos and I have talked several times of him really leading the charge for PPCN. Of all of the CPSN states, we constantly are hearing about how Pennsylvania is kind of leading the way with how many pharmacies are getting involved. This isn't really a should I do it. It's, it's you almost have to do it in order to continue to
Correct.
To survive and thrive.
Correct. You're right.
Plus, the community needs it. Interesting story. It's not interesting. It's actually kind of sad. On January 31st, it was reported that over 30 Kentucky-based independent pharmacies are closing. And that means out of all of those locations throughout the state, there's not going to be any healthcare services. And that's major. And you and I were saying the dominoes have toppled over, the macroeconomics of what PBMs have done for the purpose of profit is now spreading throughout the nation, and it's impacting Pennsylvania as well.
It has. And, you know, there's a lot of talk of pharmacy deserts, both rural and inner city. I mean, if you look at where the chains close their stores, the vast majority of those were inner city. And both rural and urban people need pharmacy services. There's a lot of people that are going to be without and have to drive distances, go without. You know, mail order or mailbox isn't your pharmacist.
Exactly. So, PPCN, what condition, what clinical low-hanging fruit is there? Is it diabetes? Is it a specific, is hypertension? Is there something happening in our communities where you can kind of start?
Well, it depends on the payer. Different payers have different focuses. One Medicaid MCO focuses on asthma and diabetes. Another one is a stackable opportunity for all the services we do between delivery and packaging and, monthly med rec type phone calls. Naloxone dispensing is another one. Huge need in the community for that. There's all opportunities to counsel and get paid for those.
Talk to me about expansion of community pharmacy that are ready to go. And that is, I think it's the community pharmacies that have depth of how they're making money rather than just the dispensing fee. I know there's not a secret sauce, and I also know that different community pharmacies throughout the country are experiencing success in different things. I like the whole home care expansion idea. Talk to me about what some ideas you're coming up with as a pharmacy owner.
We talk about this all the time. I have a bit of a vision, what I think a Main Street community pharmacy like ours should be. You know, we should be reimbursed properly in the Medicaid space. That's state legislation hopefully coming our way to help that. PPCN helps augment that in that population. The Medicare Part D space, we feel we're very good at the long-term care at home space and helping seniors age in place. As
Excellent.
We know, there's not near enough beds for the boomers.
Exactly.
So whatever we can do to help people age in place, I think it's a great market for community pharmacy. And lastly, we're going to get into the cost plus arena here second quarter of this year. We're finalizing our offering because, people think they have to go to Giant Eagle or CVS in the commercial space.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can offer them affordable generic prices in our service, it's a win-win for everybody.
Dr. Kyle McCormick will be talking about cost plus here at the PPA 2024. we're excited to hear some of the feedback from people that are participating in that session. Are you going to that session?
I believe so.
Okay. Well, I always enjoy talking with you. Eric Cushy with Curtis Pharmacy, a powerhouse in Western Pennsylvania for community pharmacy, independent community pharmacy. And I know you care about your community, which is very important. And I can't wait to have you back.
Thanks. Appreciate your time.
I was so excited knowing that Dr. Jenna Quinn was going to be at the Pennsylvania Pharmacist 2024 annual conference, and you were talking on polypharmacy and pediatric population. Jenna, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure, Todd, and an extra thank you for letting Justin and I really have our home in pediatrics and review. It's been amazing to be a part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
The Pediatric Pharmacist Review is the fourth or third most popular podcast on the network, so it has grown tremendously over the last year. And it's a necessary need that you're not only teaching a specific sector of pharmacy, but there are community pharmacies out there that are like, how do we make additional impacts to community? What can we talk about? Well, if you listen to the Pediatric Pharmacist Review, it's going to start spawning ideas in their heads about what they can do to educate their community.
Yeah, and you know what? Justin and I, we're at an interesting point in my business, Perfecting Peds, where we're onboarding a lot of pediatric pharmacists that have really niche areas, for example, just psych. So we're having to step back and actually re-educate them on like the basics of pediatrics across multiple disease states. So our upcoming episodes are going to be really the 101 of pediatrics and disease states of, okay, I'm a pharmacist. What's the down and dirty? What do I need to know? And so I think that will apply among, you know, any pharmacist wherever they are in practice, as well as experience too, just to get the foundational clinical pearls. So we're super excited about that.
So the polypharmacy topic and what you spoke about here at the Pennsylvania Pharmacists Association was talking about things like matching agents that are commonly inappropriate or prescribed together, a diverse plan of prescribing appropriate medication safely. Talk to us a little bit, give us a little preview of what you were talking about.
Yeah, so there's all this literature and established guidance for and definitions. What is polypharmacy in geriatrics, right? So we have all this awareness in the geriatric and adult space and all these definitions. And for pediatrics, there's none of that. So just to give you some insight on, for example, the kiddos, the first 102 kids that Perfecting Peds ever worked with, these kids had an average of 23 medications. Nobody talks about the medically complex pediatric patient or even just the certain hot pockets of polypharmacy. So autism, ADHD, GI, a lot of them have high frequency of polypharmacy. And as it would make sense, the more meds you add, the more chances, you know, that's polypharmacy, the more chances you have for adverse drug reactions, hospitalizations, and readmissions. So in our study that we're publishing at JPPT in June, what we found was that there's so much room for a pharmacist to intervene and help the patient when there's numerous medications on for the same diagnosis that could have been prescribed by various prescribers, right? So the psychiatrist and the neurologist have overlapping medications, you know, GI, and then they all interact, right? Mm-hmm. So everyone's practicing in silos. So the preface was basically what we want to educate providers on, is there a way to minimize the amount of medications, maximize their efficacy, and also with that, minimize the adverse drug reactions that we see, the side effects. And really what we found in our study was that 15% of these children's meds were unnecessary. Hmm. Or they were causing adverse reactions. And just from identifying and treating polypharmacy and minimizing it, we were able to reduce hospitalization by 44%.
Holy cow.
So, and what that attributed to, which, you know, the C-suite care about and the healthcare plans, is 1.1 million annual cost savings and cost avoidance in just 102 kids. So there's a lot of reasons we should be aware of it, but traditionally where you have your other providers that are on the patient's care team thinking, okay, this is actually a disease state. When pharmacists come in, we're like, this isn't a disease state. This is an actual adverse drug reaction, and we're adding more drugs on to treat a side effect of a medication. And so the whole preface was giving them kind of the meat of, here's the most common medications we see that are on together that cause the most problems, and here's how we deprescribe and take away those medications and identify these issues. So again, it's not really talked about in pediatrics, and there's not a ton of literature, but the cool thing about our team is, you know, having years of experience, we're able to pull from our experience and say, here are kind of the hot medications that we see that don't play well together when they're on board. Really the whole preface was, if a medication's not working, take it off, you know, wean it off. And then if there's a way to just use one med, use one med. And so again, just minimizing the polypharmacy to help basically have the best outcomes for the healthcare system and the patient and caregiver.
If a pharmacist is listening to you, if a physician is listening right now and they want to reach out and connect with you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
I'm really active on LinkedIn, just like you. So Jenna, J-E-1-N-A. My parents had to be different. And then last name, Quinn, Q-U-I-N-N on LinkedIn. And then we also have an email address. You can email directly, info@perfectingpeds.com, and a website. But those are the easiest ways to get a hold of me.
Dr. Jenna Quinn, we are so proud of you and Justin, Dr. Justin Cole, for all of the amazing content that you drive through the Pediatric Pharmacist Review. And we thank you so much.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure, Todd.
When I come to the Pennsylvania Pharmacists Association meetings, this is the annual running into John DeJames. Is just, it's like, if I don't run into you, then there's something wrong. So it's good to see you, John.
Yeah, likewise, Todd. Always good to see you and your following that comes with you, actually. So you get a lot of people excited.
It's fun to use the resources and the platform that's been built over the last 15 years to amplify the voice of our pharmacists, and more specifically, the voice of Pennsylvania pharmacists. Something special is happening in Pennsylvania in representation to the rest of the nation, which has come from CPSN and has become the PPCN. And value and you and I and people in our networks are all behind this. And it has to keep growing and it has to spill out into other states. But let's talk about Pennsylvania. What is at the top of your list in amplifying and talking about in order to move pharmacy forward in the state of Pennsylvania?
So that's one of my big key phrases. I always say we have to work together to move this profession forward.
Yep.
And that has to do with pretty much all disciplines, not just community pharmacy. It could be hospital pharmacy, the specialty sector that sometimes isn't represented here, compounding that sometimes we don't see, you know, at the state. So trying to work together with all the constituents that are actually involved in the profession is probably the first and foremost always on my mind. When I take a look at how community pharmacies impacted, the greatest impact that we had for patient care so far has been PPCN, or the Pennsylvania Pharmacy Care Network. And with, you know, with over 200 locations, I always look at the independent side as these are the guys that are nimble. They can do stuff quickly. They can get a program up and running. Having been on the other side of the fence, I know sometimes how cumbersome it is. If you had to push something corporately out, it could take 6 months before you see fruition of the program. I love being in the independent space now just because, you know, we could basically design, execute, and have a disease state program up and running probably within the location in 30 days if someone gives us the green light. The other thing too is, you know, customer care is always the biggest thing when you think about pharmacy. So, you know, I know maybe previously, you know, you had 120 seconds at checkout.
Yep.
So think about that, 2 minutes from when you used to come up to the counter. In the community space on the independent side, these guys know their customers. They talk longer than I could tell you than 2 minutes.
Yep.
You know, it's the deliveries that we see, the patients at home that get taken care of now just because these pharmacists or, you know, even the delivery drivers, especially with the focus on social determinants of health, how do we help those people that maybe can't come to us, that are in these underserved areas? You know, I live in the South Hills of Pittsburgh, and what a rash of community pharmacists chain-wide that have closed, it's left some big gaps.
Yep.
I just was talking to someone from Glassport, and I said to him, you know, you don't have a pharmacy anymore. You have to go two zip codes over to get service.
Jeez.
You know, I think of the people of Hazelwood, that retail pharmacy community chain closed. There's only one independent left. If not, those people have to go over to West Homestead or Greenfield to find quality care. So that pharmacist, you know, that's been there, he's the pillar of the foundation,
yeah,
and of a community. And that's, to me, that's what keeps me motivated. You know, we're really excited. We've had a couple meetings, at least one here today, with the provider status memo that came out yesterday from DHS. So, you know, once again, how do you get our guys ready to go when this hits March 1st?
Yep.
You know, we hope we get, like I said, it's been announced that some of the MCOs are supposed to, you know, follow it. Now, we just hope that, you know, we get to help those patients that those MCOs affect. I mean, living on the Western Pennsylvania side, you know, there's only two health plans that are pretty much, I would say, 80-85% of all the population in Western Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So how do you work with those guys closely to design these programs that are really going to give quality patient care that, you know, everybody talks about it, Todd. So, you know, you either got to, whatever that is, talk the talk, walk the walk. You know, I love to be a part of that. I love being the fact that PPA is forefront, working with all their constituents, including you, to amplify our voice of what can we do.
Yep.
This is the stuff that we can do. And you know what? We're pretty damn good at it.
Yep. We are. Pennsylvania really is leading the charge in the community pharmacy enhanced services networks. PPCN, I'm proud of Brandon Antonopoulos, you know, helping to lead. And PPA has taken a lot of pride in it. And I think you're going to be more closely looked at by the rest of the nation based on the success that Pennsylvania's had. What I'm waiting for, and this doesn't happen overnight, is the growth of our community pharmacies and the growth of pharmacies working together within spaces, like you just said, that have lost their community pharmacy or have lost the only medical facility that's around based on, you know, the status quo of how things get paid for. And I see the clinical services that are being provided are being paid differently than just a dispensing fee, which that has to continue.
And, you know, look, we could sit here all day and talk about reimbursement and what a dispensing fee. You know, the funny thing is you really say dispensing fee. And with most of the contracts that we see out there, there's no longer a dispensing fee. I mean, you know, in the old days, you got it maybe a couple bucks for your dispensing fee. Now, you know, we have some plans that pay zero. We say we have one that pays a nickel, maybe one that pays a quarter. That doesn't pay for the vial. It doesn't pay for the label.
Right.
You know, so how do you move upon that? And, you know, the ancillary service is just where it really hits, which it hits home. You know, I always feel like, you know, growing up in the inner city as a kid, you know, when I got sick, my mom went, I know exactly who she called. She called Bloomfield Drug. She said, I got to talk to Lenny, and Lenny got me fixed up.
Yeah.
You know, I never really witnessed my mother ever calling a chain back in the day until one finally did move into Bloomfield that I actually started my career with, Thrift Drug. There's probably a lot of old Thrift Drug guys walking around here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we need to get the younger population excited about it because, you know, some of them go to work and it's just when they go to work, they get beat down.
Yep.
They get beat down because there's no staff. They get beat down because there's too much volume getting pushed through and they don't have time to think. They get beat down because, you know, they talk to their preceptor that they're working on the bench with, and sometimes they're saying, this isn't the job that you thought you were getting into. So, you know, I think being able to show the younger generation and what is really out there, whether it be in community, hospital, like I said, even specialty, well, there's a lot of options. And, you know, we got to re-energize our workforce and the younger population here just as the expose them to what's really there.
Yep.
So
I always love running into you, John. Appreciate what your leadership and at the PPA and what you stand for. And it's always been consistent. It's been a glass half full like me, which is positivity, and we have to have that. And just wanted to say thank you for being part of the Post Show.
Well, you know, once again, I always love seeing these type of events, whether it's APHA, NCPA. You know, we really depend on you to come here and, you know, get the kids excited, get us excited, but more importantly, get the message out there of what we do.
Absolutely.
So, you know, from PPA, Value Drug, and John DeJames, thank you, Todd Urey, for being that voice for us. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We're here at the Pennsylvania Pharmacists Association annual meeting with John Minkin. John, it's so good to see you here.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's a pleasure being here.
So I met you through Bruce Nealon. You've been on the Pharmacy Crossroads podcast. Talk to us about NimbleRx. What do you guys do?
Yeah, NimbleRx is an amazing solution where we aim to enhance the patient checkout experience. And what's very unique about this model for independents is we created an additional revenue stream for the pharmacy. So you're enhancing the patient checkout, you're creating a revenue stream for the pharmacy, as well as it's really a true partnership and something that's not hasn't been done here in the independents for a long time.
Is this integrated into like a pharmacy management system somehow, or tying in correspondence with patients?
Exactly right. Yeah, Todd, great question. Yeah, so we integrate with all the pharmacy management systems out there. And with that communication and the checkout experience, being able to really reach more patients in a faster time frame, and sending everything directly back to the pharmacy management system so the staff understands, you know, which patients are using it, which aren't.
So someone listening to the podcast program, they're interested in learning more about NimbleRx. What's the best way to reach out to you and understand and maybe even set up a demo?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can reach out here. We have QR codes to walk you through kind of that patient checkout experience, as well as, you know, we can do full signups here for you if you'd like. But yeah, please come by the booth, ping me on LinkedIn. Be more than happy to set up some time to kind of walk through what that experience looks like.
Check out the website. It's nimblerx.com. Once again, that's nimble, just like it sounds, just like it's spelled, rx.com. John, we'll have to have you back and expand upon some of the pharmacies that have been working with Nimble and giving them an opportunity to share outcomes with using your technology.
We'd love to do so. Thanks, Todd.
Thank you.